This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Botzen, macht das Tor.
Das Tor, der zählt das 2:2. Dresden ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke, da kommt der Ball. Tor, 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 Tor,
Tor, Tor, Tor. We welcome you to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. 25 match days in. And once again, we are still no closer to knowing who will be champion, who will be going down, and everything in between. On today's program, we will be looking at all the action from Match Day 25, from the top of the table clash on Monday, Hamburg and Heidenheim keeping in touch, the Saxony Derby, and Wiesbaden's 6 against Osnabrück. We, of course, will be talking topic questions as well, and everything in between. Joining me today, as always, is the one and only Eva Lottebol. Eva, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And also, joining us from Paris, is Bochum's head of English media, Gabriel Radis. Gabriel, welcome. Welcome back. It's been a while.
Bonjour.
Nice to be back. Magnificent. Look at that. We're cultured. Let's get into it then. Let's start with the Monday night fixture. Easily the top spieler of the week, Stuttgart and Arminia Bielefeld. Built up to be many, a good old-fashioned six-pointer as well. Had Bielefeld won, they would have been 9 points clear at the top of the table. Stuttgart would have reduced the gap to 3 had they won. And although they took a lead on 53 minutes through Mario Gomez, it would be cancelled out when Sebio Suku got his fourth goal of the season and the points would be shared. Eva, you were at this game at a chilly Mercedes-Benz Arena. What was your impression on the game at hand?
I think the first 45 minutes weren't really for the taking. the people that stayed at home because of the coronavirus didn't miss much. I thought the second half was much better. Both teams finally knew what was coming their way because both teams had tactic changes in the lineups. For Bielefeld, it was double six with Fabian Kunze and Manuel Prieto, which surprised many people, I think. But yeah, second half, horrible defending before the 1-0. I think Hartl is losing the ball midfield, and then Nilsson and Ortega don't really know what to do. But I thought Arminia came back really good. In the end, they had the better chances to actually take 3 points out of this. Don't know what Sven Schiplock was doing, though, in that situation. But I think this is a very well-deserved draw for both sides. I think both Arminia can live with it a bit better because they're still 6 points clear. So, yeah, I can live with that.
Yeah, I think most Bielefeld fans would be pretty happy with the result and one that keeps them 6 points clear at the top of the table. They certainly were better when they went behind. They obviously were forced to attack, and it looked like Stuttgart were ready to almost set up shop. And the double substitution from Neuhaus to bring on Schiplock and Suku worked a treat for them, and it just allowed a little more attacking creativity. And as you mentioned, when Schiplock was running in on goal, with the defender slowly closing in, you just almost imagined a Sven Schiplock tour, and that would have blown the roof off of not only Twitter, but the Mercedes-Benz Arena itself. Gabriel, for Stuttgart, it's been an interesting spell for them. It's actually the first time in 2020 that they failed to win. Do you see any issues with the way that they've been playing? It does seem to be a bit inconsistent and incoherent at times. What was your takeaway from this game?
Well, I think, to be honest, I'd probably posit that both sides would be happy with the draw. I know, obviously, Stuttgart would have not wanted to have gone onto this game and then lost it, particularly at home. And it does wonders for your confidence, considering that Bielefeld are obviously the runaway, sort of champions elect, you could almost say. And then Bielefeld obviously going away to probably one of the toughest grounds in the league. They definitely would be happy with that. I think the thing is, for me, what I took away was more the fact that Stuttgart would be happy that they just kept, they're just still nudging ahead of HSV, that they're just still able to keep a little bit of a gap between them and the promotion playoff place. And then for Bielefeld, obviously, I was having a look, and obviously last year, 57 points was enough for automatic promotion. And now they're just 6 points off that. And considering they have a gimme on Friday night against Osnabrück, I mean, you can almost say that it's slightly odd, because obviously from the outside, and Eva would know a lot better than me, they seem to have been grinding out a few results of late, perhaps not the free-flowing sort of fantastic style of football and they have won a few games by a handsome margin in 2020, but not to the same quantity of that in the at the back end of 2019. And you kind of get a sort of Liverpool resilience element to this. I mean, obviously they had the 2-1-0s before this game, and they scored 66% of their goals in the second half. So it's almost like this Bielefeld side are really battle resilient and ready to actually get promoted and do well in the Bundesliga. For Stuttgart, I think just happy to take the point and to go ahead to travel to Wiesbaden, where Wiesbaden are poor at home, having only won twice at home actually in the league. You could then see them to getting a win and putting more pressure on Hamburg to keep up the chase.
Without a doubt. Speaking of HSV, they snuck past Jan Regensburg 2-1. Timo Leichert and Aaron Hunt were on the score sheet. However, they were probably fortunate to not go 2-1 down in this game when the referee at the time blew a whistle for a foul on Leichert, which would have resulted in a Jan Regensburg goal. And because the referee had blown for the foul rather than allowed the play to progress, Jan Regensburg weren't able to use... there wasn't a use for video assistant referee to check the goal. And then obviously preceding that, Hamburg went on to take the lead. Gabriel, we were talking off air about the form, I guess, of Hamburg. They've been very, not only inconsistent, but in a lot of their games recently, they've been quite poor. And this was a game where they were okay, but it wasn't one that certainly wowed the masses.
Yeah, and they've been poor at home of late. Obviously, they had a sort of unconvincing win against Jan Regensburg, and then they lost 2-0 to St. Pauli in their last two home matches. So it's a vital win for them, even though that they didn't play particularly well. But they've obviously had three games on the bounce of not winning, with the two losses and the draw. They need the win. I mean, it's classic HSV, really. You get to this kind of time of the season, and when you think they can't go wrong, that surely they're going to get promoted, surely they'll be back in the Bundesliga, where they really should be, a club of that stature really should be, that they then contrive to sort of fall off the mountain and just drop. So I mean, they'll be happy to have won the game, but yeah, it's worrying. I mean, Jan are obviously in far more worrying form. I mean, they're only 4 points off VfL in 15th. They're on 32 points, but they've lost 5 and 6, and their only winner was against a poor Wiesbaden side. So, I mean, yeah, you've also got to counter the fact that goal for Jan is that obviously what didn't count or couldn't count will be a massive psychological pitfall. I mean, they lost their last three games, including a tight loss to Dresden. I think that was 2-1. So it's hard to see how they're gonna get out of this little rut. There's not a lot of time left in the league, obviously. Well, I mean, we were discussing off air, I mean, how much of the league will be finished, but it's, yeah, I mean, a huge win for HSV in terms of their confidence. But I mean, you have to worry. Are they going to be able to sort of crawl over the line? I mean, Heidenheimer is lying in wait, and obviously, even if they were in the promotion playoff place, there's no guarantee that they'd go up. So it's hard.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, since the promotion playoff has come in, only three teams have managed to go up. So yeah, you wouldn't be too confident if Hamburg, in particular, was the team that was to play. Either was it Düsseldorf or Bremen or whomever it may be. Eva, we might be being a little bit foreshadowing what will happen maybe in a couple of weeks, because they do have Bielefeld before they play, after they play Greuther Fürth on Friday night, which will be behind closed doors. How vital will it be for Hamburg not only to try and win in Fürth, but to at least have some sort of confidence when they host the league leaders in a few weeks?
Yeah, very important, I think, especially after losing the derby at home. They do not want to lose to Bielefeld as well. I'm not very convinced by their opinion. So from Stuttgart and Hamburg, to compare those both, I was more afraid of Stuttgart away than I was about Hamburg away. Because I'm not really sure what to take out of them at the moment. In my opinion, they were very lucky that the goal for Regensburg was disallowed. For me, that wasn't really, really a foul by Grüttner, I think. So, yeah, for me, that should have been a goal. And then you have a 2-1 lead for Regensburg. Can't really say how it's going. It's going to be very weird. I think the Hamburg Bielefeld game must be behind closed doors as well. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be responsible for anyone to go there. So, yeah, really weird atmosphere. Can't really say how it's going.
Indeed.
I think that's really. Just quickly, it is really interesting to see how the pendulum swings so massively in the Zweite Bundesliga, because. Obviously, if you were to ask either, I think, or any of us really, at the end of 2019, that kind of back end, November, December-ish time, who would you rather face, HSV or Stuttgart? I think the majority of us would say Stuttgart. Stuttgart were in worrying form. They're sort of bouncing up and down from the odd win to a couple of losses, getting hammered by Hamburg 6-2, I think, in that game as well. But now, obviously, Stuttgart look much more solid of the two sides. Obviously, having brought in a new manager, and that has added some stability. But Hamburg it just seems like around this time that they can't deal with the pressure. I don't know whether not having fans in the stadium will actually help them in terms of releasing that pressure, because obviously that fan group is so vociferous and so loud and so. I mean, they back their team, but also at the same time that it's there is a constant undertone in the knowledge that this Hamburg club, this side, are underperforming for the stature of the club. So I don't know if playing a game behind closed doors where it will just be Hamburg's team against, for example, Bielefeld's team, and it will just be a matchup, it will put less pressure on Hamburg and perhaps help them in the long run. But I just find it so bizarre. I mean, it's the way in which it swings and how HSV consistently year on year have this psychological block when it comes to the end of the season.
Yeah, and that's why they brought Dieter Hecking in. He was going to be the guy to kind of fix that. Let's move to Heidenheim, who got back to winning ways, 3-1 win over Karlsruhe. And if there was a team that was heavily reliant on a player not only to lead the line but to get the goals, it's Tim Kleindienst. Another man of the match performance for him. He had two goals in this game and an assist. He assisted the opening goal for former Bielefeld and Ingolstadt midfielder Konstantin Kirschbaumer. The win means that Heidenheim are still very much in the hunt. They still are 3 points behind Hamburg, but they are very much in a good place to make a push. Eva, we kind of spoke about the importance of Kleinitz last week and how much that they missed him. And he once again showed what a good signing he's been from the start of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's someone you can always expect to get a goal, even if the rest of the team doesn't show that attitude. And he's just a very, very good goal scorer. You can see that, I think, in plenty of games this season. So very important win for them as well, because I think this is, compared to their last wins and last games, one of the more of the better ones that they were really dominant, I thought. It's against Karlsruhe, who are not really in good shape at the moment. But a very, very important win especially with Stuttgart drawing, Hamburg winning, to not lose any space or any points if they want to go up, or if they want to at least join Hamburg to fight for the relegation spot.
You say, you obviously say, Eva, that Karlsruhe are in poor form or not in the best moment. If we cast our mind back to 10 games or so, to match day 15, Karlsruhe are on 19 points. They've just beaten Jan Regensburg 4-1. They're in the top half of the table. I think I might have said that they were the surprise team for the Hinrunde for the first half of the season in terms of how well they perform. And now, you know, they were obviously 3-0 down at halftime to Heidenheim, who are albeit a consistent side. They've just picked up 5 points in those last 10 matches, and that one win and two draws. And the one win's come against a Sandhausen team that were also in free fall at the time. So, I mean, it's been pretty disastrous. They've conceded the most goals of anyone in the league, 46, considering that includes the Wiesbaden side that was hammered at the start of the season. That's really remarkable. And yes, Heidenheim have been excellent. And yes, I think Heidenheim really should have a look to see that, look to this year as the benchmark of how they can perform for next year, even if they don't get promoted or if they don't get a sniff in at a promotion playoff place. They really can push forward into push that on with next year, particularly with the way in which the structure set up at the club, where it's so stable and consistent for the past 10, 11 years. Karlsruhe, I mean, for me, they look the team that alongside Dresden are, they're not going to, I mean, Dresden have a better chance than Karlsruhe, I'd say, of getting out of the rut. But yeah, I really worry for Karlsruhe.
It will be interesting to see how they go. Karlsruhe will be playing Darmstadt on the weekend, whereas Heidenheim travel to Bochum. Both games are on Saturday. Let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we will discuss the Saxony Derby, Wiesbaden going for six, and Hanover making a push into the top half. One of the biggest and probably more underappreciated rivalries in German football is the Saxony Derby. This time it was Dynamo Dresden and Erzgebirge Aue going head-to-head. Dresden had a massive predicament of needing to close the gap with the teams in front, whereas Aue looked to continue and make sure that it was two wins on the bounce for them. Everything looked red roses when Jan Holscheid scored the opening goal in 6 minutes, initially ruled for offside, but good use of VAR saw that Aue took the lead. Patrick Schmidt got the equaliser just before half-time, and it almost seemed as if Aue had thrown the white flag. Schmidt scored again with an excellent acrobatic bicycle kick, his fourth of the season, and all 3 points going to Dresden. It means they're level on points with Karlsruhe and only a point behind Wiesbaden in the relegation playoff spot. Eva, this was a massive game for both sides. The significance in terms in the region of Saxony is very much well known, but for Dresden in particular, what a massive 3 points this was for them.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought they, especially in the second half or even shortly before they leveled, they had really good chances, and they actually shown some decent attacks. I thought it was a really, really deserved win in the end, really important as well. Especially if you see how the other teams performed in the weekend that are down with them as well, like of the likes of Wiesbaden and Hanover. So, yeah, really important win. And I thought Patrick Schmidt showed a very good performance. He already had a goal last week to decide the game. And yeah, I thought Aue didn't really do much after their goal. So there's sometimes the danger of scoring an early goal that you think the rest of the game will be very easy. So yeah, I was quite impressed with Dresden's performance in the derby.
It was almost a mimicry of the initial the game against Jan Regensburg, where they went a goal down and then immediately, as if the light had just turned on, they went hell for leather. And in this game, exactly the same. The opening stages, they were almost non-factor. They conceded the goal, and then immediately Dresden just got themselves into the game. They tactically dominated in every sort of aspect. Defensively, were very good. And I guess we probably don't understate it on this podcast, because a good number of us have played the position of goalkeeper. But it's a Gabriel Martin Mannel, who is probably one of the more underrated goalkeepers going around, unless you watch the Zweite Bundesliga, that is. And another good performance for him, but really he was the difference between this game blowing out to a much bigger margin than it ended up being.
Yeah, I agree. And he's been, to be fair, he's been very impressive all season. I saw him in Bochum and he was, I mean, obviously they got beat there, but he was still very, very good there. But Aue have been on in terrible, terrible form. I mean, you know, obviously they beat Hamburg last week 3-0, and that was a stunning result, but it's been really inconsistent with the rest of their results because they've been, I mean, it's since that 2-0 loss to Bochum, they've won 3 of 11 and just had one draw in their last five against a struggling Osnabrück. They've been in really poor form. And they've got a massive game next week. They can't underestimate the importance of that game next week in Sandhausen. Obviously, they're hosting Sandhausen, but you know they're kind of in this sort of they're mid table. So you kind of think, oh, they should be okay. But they've slid off. I mean, they were in the fourth, fifth region just a few weeks ago, but now they're just 6 points off Bochum in 15th. And the way in which the league is so saturated, it means that you can't really let off. And if you get in a rut for a few games, it can really sort of hamstring your chances of staying in the league. I mean, and then obviously on the other side, you've got Dresden and Dresden who are struggling. There's no doubt about it, but it's a massive win for them. And if they are to get out of the relegation zone, they'll have to rely on Patrick Schmidt. I mean, obviously two massive goals on the weekend. And, you know, they have Hannover next up and Hannover is their former at home isn't great. They've only won 2-12 at the HDI Arena, so it's a big opportunity for Dynamo to kind of build on that. And Schmidt, who's only played 7 games for Dresden since he moved from Heidenheim on loan, that's his fourth goal. So you know, he's played his first consecutive 90 minutes for 2 games in a row now since he's arrived, and he scored 50% of their goals since he's turned up. So he has a massive influence on them. It's a great, it looks on the surface anyway, a great winter transfer signing. If Dresden do get out of this, it will definitely be down to him, and it'll definitely be down to his goals.
Yeah, and they've been finding different ways to use him as well in this game and the game against Regensburg. He's been he played on the right with Simon Makinok. Pronunciation, I'll get it.
Makinok,
playing up front. But this was actually a player that we spoke about heading into the second half of the season as someone who really needed to make an impression. Being sent on loan from Heidenheim, we felt that this might be a bit of a last chance saloon, making the jump from the Regionalliga with Saarbrücken to Heidenheim has been a fair steep, but so far it seems like Dresden has been a good fit for him, and just whether he can continue that form, that will be one to watch for going forward. Let's move on to Wiesbaden, and wow, of all the results that I don't think many of us would have predicted, this would have to be one of them. It was probably one of the more greater surprises, but it shows a team that was hungry versus a team that is completely on the slide. 6-2 win for VfL Wiesbaden. Manuel Schaeffler with a hat-trick. He's got 15 of their 31 goals this season. And Gabriel, they are now keeping themselves within touch of that sort of cluster of clubs in mid-table, with Bochum being the first cab off that rank. What a vital result for us. And
thanks for the reminder.
Don't worry, we'll get to them later. But more importantly for Wiesbaden, you know, they've shown to be a much better team away from home, and this result, we won't say it's been coming because it hasn't, but a much needed result at a pivotal time in the season.
Yeah, and it's again another player, another striker, another attacking player that makes such a difference to his club in the form of Schaeffler. It's his first goals in 6 games, if I'm not mistaken. And when he scores, he really does. He picks up points for Wiesbaden. And we were talking off air about how, you know, this is an opportunity for him to, if you know, maybe in the summer get a bigger move. He's 29, I think, or maybe 31. He's on the cusp of 30. Either way, and so this is probably the time that he'd maybe look forward to go to move on, maybe an opportune time for him. But going to Wiesbaden. Obviously, yeah, they kept up the pace. 3 points behind Bochum, 4 points behind that cluster of teams, just in that sort of occupying 12th to 14th kind of area. But yes, it's. I mean, the issue is that for Wiesbaden is that whilst they're close, they've got a really inferior goal difference. So this 6-goal sort of hammering of Osnabrück at home, which is just, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, we spoke about it the first half of the season, definitely. me about the Bremer Brücke being like a just a fortress, being such a great place to have for a home side to you know, Osnabrück were at that point not conceding lots. They weren't scoring many either, but they were grinding out results and really creating a really toxic, a very fierce atmosphere, for want of a better word, actually, at home. But they've been woeful there of late, and I worry for Osnabrück massively. Wiesbaden, though, with the minus 12 goal difference is the difficulty really for them. They're going to have to overcome that with a number of results like this, because Bochum's goal difference is in the minus 5, minus 6 area. And that's actually quite a lot of goals to sort of catch up on.
Yeah, but scoring 6 goals and only giving up 2 and just eating into that goal difference could be pivotal for them. Either we should touch on Osnabrück, who are in a little bit of a freefall, 8 games without a win, and it's the most goals they've conceded since that 5-0 defeat to Paderborn in the Drittliga back in the 17-18 season. This is becoming a bit of a problem for them now. They play Bielefeld on Friday night. We know how much of a big game that is for them. But, you know, when it seemed almost inconceivable at the time that they were in relatively decent shape and almost comfortable in that higher mid-table, now they have to start looking over their shoulder, and teams like Nürnberg, Bochum, Sandhausen, St. Pauli are all very much in the mix of not only overtaking them, but putting themselves in the relegation battle.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that might be more of a problem with them going up. I think all three promotion sides show some struggling at this stage of the season. Okay, Wien showed it before, but especially Karlsruhe and Osnabrück. And I thought the problem was that they very easily gave up the goals. It was quite often the same mistake that Agu didn't really know how to challenge his opponents to actually stay on the ball. So very easy giving up goals, and that's the biggest problem. If you can't really do that with a side that was promoted with you, it's going to be tough on Friday night. They're a bit better away than they are at home. So in the last couple of games, I think so. That might be a better thing to look at. But yeah, they're a bit worrying at the moment.
Just a quick point on Osnabrück. Obviously, you said no wins in the last 8 games. They only got 3 draws from that. Their next 3 games are obviously Bielefeld away. Then they're home at Hanover, who are better away from home. And then they're away at Fürth. And at that point, you kind of worry that they could be on a run of 0 wins from 11 games that could possibly see them with 3 points from 33 games. And Daniel Thune's side, I mean, they will only have 6 games left. And you make a really good point, either, about that, about the promotion sides, particularly Karlsruhe and Osnabrück. I mean, we all expected Wien to struggle the whole season. They were the weaker side of the three to come up. But Osnabrück and Karlsruhe were pretty good at the start of the season, but you can tell that maybe perhaps the rigors of the Zweite Bundesliga and the way in which it's less forgiving than the Dritte Liga, in the sense of you can't really have off days, or you can't really have half to, you know, play 50 to 60% and get a draw, get a win, that it's very punishing in that respect. That these sides now, you get to the last 20 or so game, from match day 20 onwards, and it's the real crunch time, the squeaky bum time. And these sides are falling down because they haven't really got the know-how of being in... I mean, obviously, the sides are used to the less rigorous Dritte Liga. And so it's not inconceivable to see all three sides that got promoted then relegated again, because I can't see... I mean, Osnabrück got hammered by a Wiesbaden side that only picked up 2 points from 15 in the last 5 games. They only scored twice in the last 4 games. And then they hammer 6 away from home against Osnabrück. I mean, and Osnabrück were a defence that were in the top 5 in terms of goals conceded this season before the game. So it's really worrying.
That it is. And yeah, we've spoken about goal difference, and it will come into it. It could if they can't shore up that defense, could become an issue for them. A team that has very much started picking up points, I feel like it's been coming for them, but a massive win for them. That is Hanover, 3-0 win over Nuremberg, away from home. Timo Hubers, Linton Miner, and Hendrik Vidat all getting on the score sheet. What it means is that Hanover are now 7 points from the relegation playoff points, 8 points from direct relegation. And for the first time since match day 3, they are in the top half of the table. It's a massive result either way for Hanover, but it's been building. They were solid and resilient against Hamburg and were very unlucky to drop the points. They were good against Bielefeld and dropped all 3 points. It's been coming, and it's another good result for them and for Kino and Kokach's side.
Yeah, definitely. I think we spoke about it the past couple of weeks. They show better football than before. I think some Hanover fans might be a bit disappointed that they didn't show that style of playing earlier. And you could see how important maybe someone like Hendrik Vidant is for them as well as Linton Miner, who had some really, really good games in the last couple of weeks, I think. So, huge win, especially with a clean sheet for them as well, because they showed some very bad defending in some games, especially in the first half of the season. So a huge step going forward, playing against Dynamo Dresden on Sunday. So Hanover is really poor at home. They just won 2 home games this season, quite like Wien as well. So Dresden might want to continue their good form with coming off the derby win, so that it's a very important game for Hanover on the weekend.
It is a massive game for both sides, but also Nuremberg, you look at them, as we mentioned with the goal difference, they have a goal difference of negative 11, only a point above Bochum, who we'll talk about in the next section. Gabriel, they were not great in this game. They've been very up and down. Their home form, much like Hanover, has been quite poor, but there wasn't a whole lot of good things to take out of this game for Nuremberg. What's the worry for them besides obviously that calamitous defending, which was at its worst on Friday night?
I think the worry for them is that so they've won 3 of their last 6 games, which on paper in the Zweite Bundesliga is pretty good, but those wins massively paper over the cracks in terms of they've beaten the 3 teams who are, I'd posit, are the worst teams in the league at the moment in terms of Osnabrück, Karlsruhe, and Sandhausen. So, I mean, whilst those are good results, in terms of if you look at it just on a points basis, they've actually been pretty poor the rest of the time. And they, as you say, only 1 point above Bochum, 4 points off Wien in 16th. But their inferior goal difference is a real worry for them. And the fact that they just got, I mean, Hanover obviously getting revenge for their 4-0 loss at home to FCN early in the season, but they just got torn apart by a side. And it's just weird almost in a way and slightly worrying for both clubs that, I mean, Eva and I were speaking off air about how, this game really is like, I mean, we're talking about this game. This is what are the 6th game in the roundup, and this is the two. These are two massive sides that both, just been relegated. That you'd kind of expect this at this kind of time of the season, people would have bookmarked this game to be, this is the promotion battle. This will be between the top two or between the top one, the two teams in the top four. And realistically, both sides have been pretty dreadful all year, and it's a massive indictment in the way in which both sides have dealt with the Zweite Bundesliga. It says a lot about how difficult it is to be relegated from the Bundesliga and come down. But I do worry for their club. For AFC to get hammered by a side that only finished 2 points in a place above them in the Bundesliga last year. And to be where they are right now, which is just nowhere near the, not. I mean, they'd be lucky if they got a top half finish. I mean, they'd be lucky to stay up in terms of. They would count themselves. I think they would love this season to just almost for them to finish in sort of mid table mediocrity and then just to start again next year, because they are worryingly close to that sort of drop zone of, you know, if Vane pick up a couple of good wins and the other sides around them, Pauli, Bochum, get a couple of wins. Obviously, Bochum have a favourable run of fixtures in the next few weeks. Then you'd really worry for Nuremberg.
That you do. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll talk the other three games and your topic questions. We'll start with Sandhausen and St. Pauli on the other side. The final section of the podcast, we'll look at the last three games and, of course, the one and only topic question, which is related to the ultras within the Zweite Bundesliga. Let's start with Sandhausen and St. Pauli. This was a thrilling 2-2 draw, which saw various of lead changes and good goals and just good football all around, which is a surprise because you wouldn't consider St. Pauli a team that plays good attacking football, nor would you associate Sandhausen with that ledger as well. The goal was Viktor Gyökeres with his 6th goal of the season. Then Kevin Behrens scored his 11th from the penalty spot. We'll talk about him in just a moment. Robin Schur made it 2-1, and then Dimitrios Diamantakis scored his 8th goal of the season to ensure that St. Pauli left with a draw. Both sides had their chances in the final 10 minutes to score, but neither was able to break the deadlock. Gabriel, I will start with you on this one. This was an important battle for both sides, considering their positions in the table. What was your impression on the game, and do you reckon it was a good result for either side?
Yeah, I think for both sides, they'll take a draw. Sandhausen, obviously, they had that four-game losing streak, not even scoring a goal. They sort of turned that corner by then scoring 4 against Bochum last week. Obviously, this comeback draw against Pauli will have done the world good. And this is a Pauli side that's kept 2 clean sheets and 3 and seen their form allow them to rise to 30 points in 11th, which albeit is still only 2 points off Bochum in 15th, but that's 4 points off 7th, as is the nature of the league. So I think both sides will probably take a draw, take the fact that they scored some goals and that it wasn't a dreadful game to watch, which many people might have assumed before the game started. So I think you'll take that. The one thing that I wanted to take from that I saw from the game is obviously Behrens again being impressive. Kevin Behrens, who's, I mean, at 29, he could definitely move to a bigger club. But yeah, you know, come the end of the season, I think this is sort of the perfect time for him to maybe move on. He's been in pretty decent form, pretty good form actually the whole season. And Sandhausen haven't even lost a game that he's scored or assisted in. He's got 5 assists this season. And I've actually just lost how many goals he scored, but he scored a fair few. It's an impressive performance again from Behrens, and a decent result for both sides. Yeah,
I'll pick you up. He has 11 goals this season, and as one of our mates Louis Ostrowski mentioned, 6 of those goals have come from headers, 3 of them from the spot, and 2 in other ways. So that tells you the form that he is in. Eva, just quickly on St. Pauli. They've been in relatively solid form since the derby, which it just seems is the obvious choice to mention. They're in a decent position, 5 points clear from the playoffs. And when you think about it, they're just 2 points off the top half. So it's been a good recovery for them. But as we've seen with them, they've been very patchy in terms of form. And it'll be interesting to see how they go forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think we spoke about this earlier. They broke the derby curse. When they win, they can't win afterwards or just can't pick up points in any way. I think Diamantakos is really playing a role for this team again. Good to see him scoring as well as Gyökeres. I thought it was really stupid penalty to give up by Penny. So, yeah, but in the end, I think it was a good or deserved draw. So I think St. Pauli can live with it, especially with them hosting Nuremberg now.
That they can. Let's move to Kiel. They hosted Greuther Fürth. This game ended a goal each. It took Fürth 55 seconds to open the scoring through Sebastian Ernst, and then Alexander Mühling scoring from the spot after Lee Jae-sung was fouled in the penalty area. I guess some controversy in some way, shape or form with that. Eva, I'll ask you, do you think it was a penalty?
I did think, yeah. I think Seguin, the way he attacks Lee is just a bit questionably and a bit a bit obvious that he wants to foul him. So I think it's okay, you can give it. But if it wouldn't have been given, it's okay not to rule it a penalty by VAR.
It was very minimal in the contact, but maybe just enough for Lee to go down. Mueling converted that penalty. It was a pretty tight game overall, very cagey. There wasn't many scoring chances. Doesn't hurt either side in the table. They remain in the top half, and they will take that very much. So the last game was Darmstadt and Bochum. It was the only 0-0 of the match day. It means that Darmstadt are now 10 games unbeaten all the way back to December of last year. And it's Bochum's first clean sheet since match day 21. They've only kept three this season. So, Gabriel, I guess we'll look at it from a Bochum perspective. It's important they picked up the point. It means they're now 3 points clear from the relegation playoff spot. I guess maybe the biggest takeaway from a Bochum perspective would be the fact they kept that clean sheet.
Yeah, I mean, we don't keep that many, so it was pretty good going. But I mean, I can't lie. This is, I mean, there's a reason why this is the last game that we're talking about. It was pretty dreadful to watch, and I had to sit through all of it. But I think both sides will be happy with the point. Darmstadt, obviously, they get to keep their unbeaten run going. Bochum, I mean, we had the chance to really open up a gap between us and Wien, but you know, realistically, we've taken a point away from home. Danny Blum had a major chance to score quite early on, but I mean, this is the first 0-0 draw for Bochum all season, so it tells you a lot about how, you know, how rare this sort of occurrence is, how rare we don't score, and how rare we keep a clean sheet. It's only our third clean sheet all year, but I mean, for a team that concede 1.8 goals a game in Bochum, keeping a clean sheet and making sure that, particularly for on debut for our new Greek centre back, Lampropoulos, I can't really say his name, but that's a really decent result. I mean, I think the thing is for us, certainly for Bochum fans and for those involved, this result would have been far more palatable had we not collapsed against Sandhausen last week. Because a draw against a resurgent Darmstadt side is fine. But a draw against Sandhausen in the knowledge that, like, our last four games of the season are going to be very tough. I mean, we'll be away at Osnabrück, which will be a tough game because they'll both be fighting. Away to Aue, home to Firth, and then away at Hanover to finish the season. We know that now the next three fixtures will be huge in terms of picking up points. I think we have to pick up sort of in the region of 6 or 7 points because, you know, I mean, in 2017-18, 40 points wasn't enough to avoid the relegation playoff. We're on 28 now. So we need to get to, I mean, I think the 36-37 point mark will be enough for safety this year. But we've got Heidenheim at home, Karlsruhe away, and then Kiel at home. Have to pick up some points there.
That they will, but keeping a clean sheet for the first time in a few match days.
It's huge, yeah. For clean sheet's huge.
Yeah, that it is. Let's go to our one and only topic question from Steel Penguin at Steel Penguin 3. So, hello, everybody. Have any of the ultra groups in the Zweite Bundesliga protested against Dietmar Hopp? Off the top of my head, I do recall Hanover doing it in one of their recent games, as well as Bochum. And I'm pretty certain, even maybe you can help us out. Was there any sort of protesting at the game between Stuttgart and Bielefeld?
Yeah, there was one banner saying Dietmar Hopp is a, and then the whole stadium gasped for 2 minutes saying Dietmar Hopp is a Timo Werner. And of course, after his dive against Schalke a couple of years ago, everyone knows what Timo Werner is called. There were some protests, not only against Dietmar Hopp, but also against Karl-Heinz Rummenigge from both sides. From Bielefeld side, there were like a 3 steps plan from the fans that it should be allowed to criticize the DFB and to, as Rummenigge called them, I think the ugly faces of football, which he meant the ultras with. So they had like Rummenigge's name, Hopp's name, Schorchert's name on, and as well as yeah, that the truth or the the thing football is not the true football. So yeah, some really creative protests throughout Germany as well as in the Zweite Bundesliga.
Maybe Gabriel, you can explain the protests from Bochum's side, because we know that they did in their last home game. Maybe help explain what was going on at the Ruhrstadion.
So there was a slight stoppage, and there were some banners in the ultras end. The main reason for that being, I would suspect, is obviously our big fan friendship between Bochum ultras and Bayern ultras. So obviously with the Schickeria at Bayern getting obviously having serious problems both internally and externally in terms of their protest against when they played Hoffenheim 2 weeks ago, it was kind of understandable that the next day Bochum fans would then also show solidarity with the Bayern ultras. But it didn't have a major impact on the game, insofar as there was just, you know, a sort of few seconds of delay in terms of making sure those posters come down, the banners come down. Excuse me. But yeah, I mean, it's unsavory scenes. And I think this week, whilst across the board, whilst there wasn't a cessation in terms of protests, you still had protests, but they were aimed in a slightly different way so as to sort of circumvent the whole idea that you can't be directly blasphemous to a particular person. So there were a lot of protests across the board against the way in which the DFB have handled it, and a lot of sort of kind of sly things that are definitely inferences to the Hop situation. But this is something that's not going to go away. I think in a weird way, in a slightly perverse way, the DFB will be quite happy that there is a much bigger issue that's currently on people's minds in the form of the coronavirus and what will happen with the rest of the league, to detract away from what was potentially going to be a really difficult period of time for the DFB and in terms of sorting out what to do with it, with the Hop banners and the thing. Now there are going to be no fans in the ground, so there is going to be no protests across the board. So and that's something that is definitely going to be parked in the hearts and minds of people, while people are more concerned about the health and safety, as they should be, of the fans across Germany and across Europe, or worldwide as well.
Yeah, it's almost like a big win for the DFB, as it almost puts the protests on hold. I guess we should quickly talk about the coronavirus, because there are a few leagues in around the world that have either halted play or suspended play, most notably in Italy, that they have come up. They're looking at options of how to decide the league. So I guess before we go, I will put it to both of you. I'll start with you, Eva. If the coronavirus potentially halts the Zweite Bundesliga, and we may not be able to get to a 34th match day, how would you like to see the league end?
Very difficult question. I think, first of all, there is supposed to be a meeting of all 36 Bundesliga or Zweite Bundesliga clubs anytime soon. I think they should have done this a bit earlier, because there is a lot of unknowing or people are left in the dark about this. So there are a lot of hysteria about this, which doesn't make it easier, because people just simply don't get why they shouldn't visit football stadiums at the moment, or in general public crowdings, like concerts and stuff. And for example, Eintracht Frankfurt said they're going to play with fans tomorrow night against Basel, which I think is not a good idea, especially with knowing how many people fit into the stadium there. So we are at a point that it's not only to say, yeah, well, sick or old people just shouldn't go to the stadium. It's that you don't really know how you can carry the virus, and there is no antidote about this at the moment. So we just should look out a bit. So I don't know how it will carry out, if it has to be stopped, entirely stopped. there are discussions about postponing the Euro 2020 into next year, which I think would be a good idea in general, because you just simply don't know how the virus will spread across Europe. So I think this is a natural idea, as well as postponing Olympia. So a lot of people have to come to important decisions at the moment, and they should be rather done quickly than just postpone it to a couple of weeks later.
It is interesting to see. We were talking off air about this before we got started, and the potential solutions as to what should happen. I was pretty okay with the concept that if we, as we are more than two thirds throughout the season, that those who are in promotion and relegation places should either go up to the Bundesliga or down to the Drittliga, and vice versa. But Gabriel, you spoke of a situation that was happening in Italy. Perhaps explain as to what they are potentially thinking and maybe how it could work in the Zweite Bundesliga.
So the Italian FA are pretty confident that the season is going to be sort of nigh on impossible to play out. I mean, at the moment as it stands, for example, Inter Milan, and this is before the announcement that all games will be postponed until the beginning of April, so that even clogs out further. Inter Milan were meant to play 9 games in May. That's now been up to, I think, about 14, which is just impossible. So I think people are pretty confident that unless the Euros are shifted, unless we play into the summer, that it's going to be pretty much impossible to. And realistically, this seems like this is an issue that will last months, not and potentially even stretching into a couple of years, as opposed to a week thing. And just stopping football for a couple of weeks isn't going to solve the problem. So the Italian FA have given 3 options to the Serie A and the leagues, in that they can either call this year null and void and start again with the same batch of teams next season, which would then pose the problem as to who plays in European competitions going forward to next year. There's the other option of taking the league as it stands now, that would see the teams like Brescia, Spal, go down, even though I mean Spal and Brescia have slim chances of staying up, but it does look likely that they probably will go down. And they would also see Lazio, I think, would win the title then. But it would almost be very bittersweet for a side that have been so excellent this year and gone 21 games unbeaten and won't be able to finish their season. And then the other option is to play a series of playoffs to decide the winner of the title winner, the relegation playoffs places rather, and the European spots. I guess that makes sense insofar as if you're confident that a team that are ninth won't be able to make fourth. I think the thing is with that what you've seen with Leverkusen, for example, in the Bundesliga, is that despite the fact they were pretty average for the first half of the season, their fantastic form in 2020 has meant that they are a very outside chance for a top 2-3 position. I even heard somewhere on the radio say that they, if they keep this up and Bayern stumble a bit, which I don't think they will, they could even be close to the Meisterschale. So you have to be enormously confident that there isn't going to be a side like that Napoli, for example, who are mid-table but will see themselves as having a decent chance still of maybe getting a European spot. But it's very difficult. I mean, I think the whole thing is this whole banning of the public. I watched Leipzig Spurs last night, and I saw how obviously you had I don't know why they even had mascots. I mean, that even in itself speaks volumes of the commercialization of UEFA and the idea of and the whole economic interest that football has been taken over by. But they had mascots, but the mascots were standing like 3 meters in front of the players instead of with them. You may as well just not have them. And then they obviously didn't shake hands, but I remember I saw a bit where sort of Dayo Upamecano, the centre back for Leipzig, had got in a tangle with Aurier, and they were lying on top of each other and rolling over. And then at the end of the game, they weren't allowed to shake hands, so they elbowed each other and stuff. And it's like, it doesn't really make sense. I'm pretty sure there'd be a transmission of something, in the sweat and all that during the game, and as opposed to this sort of superficial idea of, oh, you can't shake hands or whatever. And you saw this sort of comical thing where the referee tried to shake hands with his assistant referee at the beginning of the game, but the assistant ref wouldn't wouldn't shake his hand, so he kind of fist bumped a handshake. It was just odd. So there are a lot of things that we need to iron out. There's this thing in France as well where you can't have a gathering of more than 1,000 people. That begs the question, surely if you have 999 people, what is the difference between having that and 1,000? You know, considering a transmission can happen over, you know, just, you know, person to person. So there's, I mean, this is, these are unprecedented, these are uncharted waters for football, for sport, for, I mean, this is for the modern society that we have, with the most recent occurrence of something like this SARS in 2003. That's the numbers have well exceeded SARS, and SARS didn't really, I mean, it affected Canada quite a bit, but it didn't really get into Europe so much. This is unprecedented, and the way and we've seen time and time again how poor leagues and federations are at dealing with normal day-to-day stuff. They're rubbish. VAR, terrible. And yet, you know, I mean, for them to deal with something like this is a whole different ball game, and it'll be very, very interesting to see. I mean, obviously we'll keep an eye on it, and we just got to hope that, you know, those who are affected, you know, recover well, and that the transmission of the illness, it stays at a very low rate, but or lowers rather. But everyone doesn't know where to go with this.
Indeed, it will be certainly something that we'll be keeping an eye on, and whether it affects the status of play, we will have to wait and see. And that's it for another episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. I thank you, Gabriel. I thank Eva for coming on the show again. And until next time, we will see you next week. We hope you have a good weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football. Goodbye.